Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, hosted by Dr. Ryan Mauley and Travis Buzzell. Join us on this journey as we educate the patient population, inform today's medical providers, and inspire tomorrow's medical leaders through education and in-depth discussion. We can all discover today's best healthcare solutions. Now, sit back and enjoy Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Sawbones Mauley, and my co-host,
Travis Buzzell.
Tonight.
Yeah, this is a long time coming. I know,
Very long time coming.
We've scheduled this a handful of times and rescheduled it. And, our guest tonight is a healthcare entrepreneur, a healthcare advocate. And, you know, we've had some opportunity to chat with him a little bit. And I am convinced, not just because of his name, that he might be either a relative or the reincarnation of the character, the most interesting man in the world. So,
oh, yeah.
I would like to introduce.
What beer was that?
Modelo?
No. I think it was a...
No.
Who is that?
Who is that?
Who is that? Is it him?
It's
is
not
it?
Tecate.
Without further ado, Dutch Rojas. There he is. How
hey,
are you?
Hey, what's going on? Dude, like, we've been trying to get this thing together for a while.
I feel like it's probably...
The doc gets all riled up about something on LinkedIn, and he's like, where are you going to be on the podcast? I'm like, man, today, let's go.
So, yeah, I mean, it's been several months. Yeah. I've been following you for well over a year now on LinkedIn. And I mean, just the content every single day, multiple times per day, is spot on with what's going on in the healthcare industry world, the chaos that's going on. And, as we start all these podcasts, I think for our viewers and for us too, it's really important to kind of understand, like, who is Dutch and where are you from? Like that 30,000 foot 2 to 3 minute version.
Yeah.
And then we'll get into the details a little bit later.
It's the part I don't want to do because it's lame. No, in all seriousness, sorry. We were having so much fun before we really started.
We'll start having fun again. Let's get through this, yeah, okay. And then we can do all that right. Again.
It starts in 3 seconds. My nickname is Dutch. Now it's my real name. I came from the Netherlands to the United States in 1993 and went to college. And look, it's a really simple story. I went on a missions trip with my university in 1996, and I ended up in Guyana. And in Guyana, I encountered a whole group of physicians and nurses, and we were helping out at the orphanage, right? Because that's what 18, 19-year-old kids do for their summer. It sounded amazing, and I was so excited to go down there. I wasn't. But anyways, that's what I did. And I get down there and I saw my first portable surgery center. And we spent almost 5 weeks helping out. Like, you know, people would come from, I'm telling you, like, I don't even know how to describe it. I have pictures and I show them often a lot. It's, you saw people queue up and they came from all over the place. So we're somewhere on the Amazon at these gold mines and we're just kind of moving down the Amazon. And the docs and their teams would collapse this surgery center like a big tent, right, with a sterile tent inside. They had a portable C-arm, right? I mean, like, they had stuff. And they're literally, like, moving it down the Amazon. And we're helping out. And they were all attached to villages that had orphanages. And so that's where I was like, hey, I'm an accountant, but I want to be in healthcare, and I don't know how that's going to happen. That was kind of how I figured it out. I got to New York City in the summer of 1997, and I never stopped. I want to be a healthcare guy, and I want to figure this out.
With The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, like the riverboat cruise, wasn't it called? Like the jungle
exactly
cruise?
Yeah, exactly like that.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I don't know that they had C-arms or medical.
They could. Like, what kind of surgeries were they doing? Like, it was all pediatric surgeries?
Pediatrics, like cleft lips.
Okay.
But also dentistry, like oral surgery. That was pretty serious. I mean, I don't think they were doing total joints out there. They weren't, especially in 1997 in the outpatient space.
Right.
But no, I mean, all like very minor procedures. but still, it made you take stock of like, hey, in the Western world, we have everything. Even if you don't have money, right? If you're really that hurt or injured, you can show up at a health system and like, they're going to fix it for you. Whereas, you know, people in downstream Amazon and Guyana, like they're not getting the help.
So 19,
and so it was
97,
1996.
Yeah. But then you said you came to New York in 97.
Yeah. Summer of 97.
And
yeah.
You've been here since then.
Yeah. Never left. Came from Holland and got out of school and stayed, and man, I love this place. I love America. Today's a great day, I think. I'm like all God blessing America all day long today. So I'm super happy.
Yes. For those, because this won't air for probably another 4 to 6 weeks, but today is January.
They'll know exactly 20th. What we're talking about.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we did talk about the, I think it was off air, but the national championship football game is this evening in a couple hours. Notre so we're going to be watching that. So, but yeah, I mean, it's interesting to hear your story, especially the fact that you weren't born in this country, but like you've kind of adopted this country, or this country's adopted you. What beyond that kind of medical mission trip kind of led you to where you are today? I mean, you mentioned that you're an accountant by trade, but
yeah,
like what prompted you?
Yeah, sure. Well, I started working at a REIT, real estate investment trust, right? And I ended up in a New York basement. I was very boring, very typical, right? For what accountants and financial analysts do. It sucked basically, but you know, it's like you're 25 years old. Like, what are you going to do? And so I did that. And then I ended up doing a bunch of healthcare projects. So most people don't know, but you know, somebody has to do an analysis when you want to build a surgical hospital, surgery center, radiology center, or an acute care hospital, right? No matter what it is, there's some little nerd like me that's out there going like, well, when you buy the land, it costs this much money, and here's how much money we have to borrow. And then, you know, someone's got to put all that package together, and that was kind of my job. So I did that for 6 years. And when I got done, a bunch of great docs, I mean, you know, they were in their late 50s, said, hey, why don't you help us? Right? So I ended up in the de novo surgery center business, which was really great. I loved it. I got to help docs. I got to understand really the supply side of healthcare. I didn't really know, right, when I worked for the REIT, I really didn't know the difference between like ortho, spine, neuro, you know, I mean, that wasn't my bailiwick. But when I went to work for those guys, like I really figured it out. I got to do a lot of out-of-network business, and that's really what led, like the out-of-network business is really what got me into the healthcare entrepreneurship side. I had no idea. I had no idea really what self-funded businesses were and what self-funded employers were. I thought that we were fighting the big bad insurance companies. And back in those days, you know, you could really like, I mean, of course I was in Manhattan, but you could really get a lot of money for a laminectomy. I mean, you could get $100,000. And people are like, you got $100K for a laminectomy? I'm like, yeah, all day long. And so, you know, we'd bang out of network stuff and it worked. And what happened was literally a guy calls me from this San Francisco group called the Group on Health. Have you guys heard of that? It's like a pretty big national, like, well, it's not on the supply side, it's on the demand side. It's the insurance guys. And they advocate for new innovation to lower employer expenses. So this guy calls me from the Lowe's Corporation, right? So you got Home Depot and Lowe's. And he's like, Dutch, you are killing some of our employers. Now, he wasn't talking about me specifically, but he was talking about our organization. And he started kind of like over the next 18 months, he kind of taught me the self-funding business. He was like, look, when an employer comes to you and you bang them for this much money, like it's coming straight out of our pocket. Now, of course, I made jokes like you're the Lowe's Corporation, you're a publicly traded company, you can afford it, you know, stick it. But at the end of the day, I really got the concept. And in 2008, I started my first direct-to-employer, direct contracting company called Sano Surgery, S-A-N-O Surgery. And that's when I got to meet great docs all over the country and attach them to employers. Now, by the way, the whole business was pretty rudimentary, right? Like today, it's super advanced. people have heard of direct contracts. People know back then people didn't know anything. I mean, I get doors slammed in my face. The way that we made it work was like, I was doing business with friends, you know, that we'd done surgery centers for, and they would at least listen. I'm not saying that they would do business with us, but they would at least listen. That's really kind of what started me down this path. I fell in love with the idea of, hey, you know what? We can make this easy for patients. No copays, no deductibles, no out-of-pocket. We can get docs paid at 100%, which increased our net contribution margin for our practices. And it made the docs happy. Like, nobody wants to collect copays and deductibles. Like, that's a pain in the rear end to do it, right? And you got all these accounting problems that probably only I would care about, but I hated them. And I was like, man, no, I want you to pay everything. Just give it to me in one check. And so that's kind of really what led me down the path of healthcare.
That's so interesting that you just touched on that right before we jumped on the podcast. Our producer, we were talking a little bit about, you know, how's everything going? I'm like, it's January. It's deductible season, right? So it's like, you know, we're chasing money and we're, you know, doing all this stuff with, you know, patients and insurance companies. And I mean, it really is just a pain. And, you know, one of the reasons, I mean, I was so interested to kind of talk to you and, you know, kind of explore that conversation that you're having is that, you know, that director employer model. We've been talking about this for, you know, years of, you know, going to, you know, those self-funded plans with those big corporations. And, you know, even in small towns, I mean, people don't realize, I mean, you know, number one, there are, you know, networks like yours that, you know, in more rural, maybe smaller areas where, you know, there are big organizations that maybe already have one of these, you know, sort of models set up, you know, somewhere in bigger cities where maybe it seems like it's more applicable. But, you know, there are areas where, like, you know, private practices can, you know, maybe potentially network with someone like you and, you know, and go directly, you know, to some of these employers or like work through someone like you to, you know, have that conversation because it is. I mean, I understand the strategy of, you know, going out of network and, you know, taking advantage of that model, but it's like, hey, if I could do 100% of whatever the subspecialty is and, you know, we can make it work for us, make it work for you, and we'll provide great care. I mean, it's like a win-win-win all the way around, right?
Yeah, and the nice thing is, look, in 2008, Citibank was very nice to seed us some money and kind of kick it off. We shut down a couple of years later because we couldn't make it work. And then we took like a six-month hiatus and we started again. You know, I mean, I'm like, I know this works. You know, we're just bad timing. But, you know, back then, and even up till about 5 years ago, it was pretty hard. You had a health plan. So let's take your practice, right? Let's say you got 100 people and you went self-funded. Even back then, we had to use two different bank accounts, right? So you're dropping your contributions or your premiums into one bank account to pay for your coverage. And then in order to pay the direct contracts, that's a whole different process. Today, it's one. Like we've done, and this really speaks to the rural piece, which really bothered me, right? Like I'm involved with PHA, physician-owned hospitals, and like try to get docs into rural communities because docs are happy to do it. It's the corporations that don't want to. And so what we did was we started integrating with TPAs and they started doing custom fee schedules for us. And so let's say you're in a small town of like 75,000 people in, we're gonna come up with a real story in Western Nebraska, right? 75,000 people is not a lot of people. I mean, it is, but it isn't. And then, what we did was we got a TPA to let us do our own fee schedule. And so people can.
And for the lay people out there, what does TPA mean?
Oh, a third party administrator. That's who pays all of the bills that we all deal with. So when you do a procedure, you submit your bill and that's how the claims processing process gets fulfilled. And so very easily we were like, hey, well, we can't have two systems. It's too complicated. Right. Like employers are writing checks directly to doctors. And I love that, except it creates a bunch of mess in the accounting side. And the engagement was tough. You had to go to that employer and then now you've got to reach out to members individually. Well, guess what? Nobody cares about healthcare until they have to care about it. Right. So you had, let's say out of 100% utilization in the plan on 100 employees, you'd only have like 10 employees actually do it. Right. And so
what are the other 90 doing?
Well, they were just using their regular benefits, right? Okay. Copay, deductible, big out-of-pocket max. And you'd ask them later and they go, well, I didn't know. And you'd say something like, well, we sent out 13 emails this year, blah, blah. But like, they just don't know. And I always sympathize with that because I'm like, look, in my email box, I probably get 300 or 400 emails a day. Like what do I, like, I'm not paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, there's some that I miss that I'm sure are really important, but I miss them. Sorry. And so for these kind of things, we just integrated. And by integrated, I mean, like you, the employer, only write one check now, right? You just deposit that money in the account. And then the nice thing is on the portals where people find out who's in network and out of network, it says no copay, no deductible. Here are the 10 doctors you can see. Here's all the facilities you can go to in your area. And that's really, I mean, over the last 6 months, it's made it a lot nicer.
So
a lot more utilization.
I kind of want to go backwards a little bit here because everything that I've ever seen you post on LinkedIn is very, very physician friendly and very, very private practice friendly, endorsing, supportive. Where did that come from? And I love it because I'm in private practice and I think our goals and missions and our mantras are very similar, but where did that come from? Because there's multiple angles that you could have taken with this.
Yeah, I think there's two primary reasons. One, building surgery centers. I got to know private practice docs, the very best. And, you know, we're all from the East Coast here, or more or less. And I found East Coast guys, especially when I was young, right? So I'm 49. But when I was 23, 24, 25, I liked them because they'd scream at you when they were mad, right? They didn't hide their feelings. They were like, you guys know what that was like.
Yeah.
And I like that. And I had these relationships with these docs that I still have to this day where it was like a real relationship. So where they cared about you enough to scream at you and yell at you and you had to learn. And I'm really saying all that to say, like, I understood from their perspective why quality was so good and patient care was so high. And when I met, and I'm not bouncing on employee docs, I'm not. But when I looked at health system quality and I looked at the job and I looked at the work, every single day of the week, I would bet on private practice docs. Now, I'm not saying all private practice docs are hey, ho, hum, they're the best. But I mean, as a whole, like out of the 1,056,000 docs, I'll go private practice all day. Now, later on in life, I just happened to own a claims company, like claims analytics company, right? Where we could see who was paying what, when, and where. Well, guess what it showed? Like physician-owned hospitals continue to dominate, and then surgery centers continue to do better.
Yeah.
In 1997, I remember having this interaction with a total joint guy who I love. I'm saying that on purpose. He told me, you know, Dutch, you're just an accountant. I'll never do outpatient, total joint. I'll never do in the outpatient setting. It's super bad for patients. And we laugh about it now. But what I loved was that fight. Right, because he really was right at the time, and I was wrong at the time, but I knew that I would be right someday, right? Yeah. I knew that all the technology would catch up. I knew that we would be able to do the studies to show that one day we were going to get there, right? And by 2008, 2009, 2015, and certainly today, it's not unreasonable to do total joints in the outpatient setting. So I think I just came from a point of like experience.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in this thing almost 27 years. My little kids remind me I'm getting old because I'm getting gray hair.
Well, I'm glad you're on the right side. I think that's where it comes from. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, look, I think when I post and I do all my own posting, I do it like on Saturdays and Sundays most of the time, but it is genuine.
Do you schedule it then?
This is so much content.
Know,
well, I mean, you could do it too if you weren't seeing patients and doing surgeries.
Right. But I'm just saying, you have, I don't know how many posts per day, 3, sometimes 4. Are you doing all of that on the weekend and then you schedule it so that it's dropping on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday?
Yeah, I use that. There's a app, $9.99. I've been using it for almost 10 years. It's called Buffer, B-U-F-F-E-R.
Okay.
I mean, there's a bunch of them out there, but that one's $9, so I like it. Yeah, and I just, you know, whatever I'm thinking about, and I just start typing. And then soon enough, it makes sense.
He's like the Wu-Tang Clan. He's got hidden albums that he's had music stashed for the last decade. You just get, all right, I need a post here. Send it out there. I got stuff.
Yeah, I'm writing all the time. If you see something really cool, though, you know, like news stories come out every day. Like if I post a news story, it's, you know, because I'm like on my phone or something. You know, I'm like, I think once you get pretty good at it, it doesn't take very long anymore. You know, when I first started, like 15, 16, 17, bro, it was like, it would take, I would sit there at night and my wife would scream at me for not yelling, not spending time with her. And I'm like, babe, I'm trying to write this one post, you know, and it took like 2 hours. It was terrible. I mean, but that's how it was at the beginning, you know, it takes a little time.
Yeah, I think that's how everything is, right? Like once you kind of understand the process and get the creative juices flowing and kind of nail down your sequence. I mean, it's just, it's a lot more smooth.
I think the landscape has changed a lot though, right, Dutch? I mean, you know, going back, you know, when you're talking, you know, 2015, 16, 17 until where we're at now. I mean, I just feel like the conversations that we're having and, you know, the whole premise of this podcast and the platform and, you know, on LinkedIn now with, you know, we've talked about it before, but just like the community that's kind of grown and kind of being created with a lot of people being kind of on the same page and just sharing, like this is like kind of unprecedented, right? I mean, there's just never been the accessibility that we have now. And I feel like that definitely is a huge driving factor. And, you know, when you can get a, you know, kind of, we were kind of joking around earlier, a bunch of East Coast guys in a room and we're kind of screaming and huffing and puffing and bitching all the time about stuff. It's like, you know, it's kind of contagious and you know, it's like, all right, man, that guy's right. And then, you know, you have your spin on it and then, you know, you're reading something else and it's like, it almost is kind of hard not to, right? I mean, you know, and particularly with this conversation in healthcare and, you know, coming from the position that you're talking about, obviously with, you know, private practices and, you know, looking at, you know, different models, you know, direct to employers and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, just the bigger picture of like, just that as like a general concept of like managing healthcare, like just from like a cost transparency, like let's make sure it works for the guy who's paying the bill, the guy who's getting paid to provide the services. It's just like, it's insane to me that this just isn't like in, you know, the other 90 people that we talked about that just elect to use their, you know, just their normal benefits with the high, you know, out of pocket deductibles and, you know, the copays and this and that. It's like, I just feel like, again, a part of the conversation, you know, and it's in the name, solutions, right? It's like this healthcare thing is just, I mean, it's getting out of hand. The insurance companies, the declining reimbursements, it's like, you know, we expect these, you know, providers and, you know, physicians that, you know, are going to school half their life to then provide all of these, you know, just life altering, whether it's, you know, regaining functional mobility, being able to walk again, being able to live, you know, pain-free, and in some cases, you know, actually save their lives. And it's like, yeah, man, I know what happened last year, but this sucks, but we're going to pay you less to do that now. Oh, and by the way, now you're going to have to increase your volume by, you know, 25, 30% in order to maintain. It's just like, where does it end?
Look, we, you know, I mean, several of the new initiatives we're working on, I exited out of two businesses Q3 of 22, right? So I've had a few minutes to kind of like reconsider what we're doing. And I can say one thing, I'm exhausted by people pitching me solutions. And I'm trying to encourage all of our friends, the startups we've invested in, to really start looking at market initiatives. And just for fun, market initiatives are kind of how you upend industries, right? They're the iPhone, they're the Amazon, right? They're the new thing that doesn't care about anything that's been done previously, right? Like in the insurance market, initiatives aren't like, hey, can I save you 10% on your employee benefits, right? Like, I'm like, okay, but like 90 guys called me last week to do that. Like, what's that going to do for me, right? Like, show me how to run my practice. Give me like really good concrete steps. And whatever I can't do, like, I need you to give me somebody in my office that could do it for me. Right. And so one of the big challenges we have is look, we got to fight the health systems. Right. And so one of the things we're working on is let's pick on Philly. Philly is a place that I want to pick on. So you got UPMC, right? They're the big dog. They're humongous. Like they're a pretty formidable foe.
I know a little bit about them.
All, yeah. 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 Like I'm going down there next week. And it's like, okay, well, how do we fight them? And so I say to these docs, right? I'm like, well, why don't you guys get together? Well, they're like, well, you can't do that. I'm like, you can do that. And here's how you do it. Right. And so in three other states, we put coalitions together of more than 500 physicians under one tax ID. Now, do I want to tell those docs what to do? Absolutely not. Right. So I'm like, okay, well, how do you find a solution that leaves docs to have their own autonomy, be their own boss, but just for the sake of being able to contract together, right, against the payers and being able to build our own full benefit stack, right? So if UPMC has a network and an insurance offering, why can't I get 500 docs together and build our own? Like, it's just really, like, everybody says, well, that's super complicated. I'm like, it's not complicated. I'm like, if I can do it, and I am not the sharpest knife in the drawer, like, in 10 minutes, I can teach you how to do it. And when I tell them and I show them, they're like, oh, it really is that easy. I'm like, yeah, how do you think insurance guys make money? Bro, it's not hard. This stuff is simple. You know, get 500 docs together, and now all of a sudden you're negotiating with payers, and all of a sudden you get a 20-25% bump. Get 500 docs together, and now you can call the MA plans that don't pay you on time, that have pre-authorization problems. And guess what? You get rid of the five of them and you keep two. And now all of a sudden you don't have any problems, right? We did that in another state. And so I think there's a ton of solutions. I just want to try to figure out how to get docs to not compete where they don't have to. Like, if the three of us are in the same business, right? But we don't need to compete on HR. Why do we need to compete on benefits? How about property? Do we need to compete on who gets a better property deal from the insurance guy? No, we don't. We don't at all. But if we unite together and we put all of our ASCs together, I can, you know, because I'm an accountant, I can show you how we can net out our property coverage. Like, we won't have to pay a dime in 3 years.
So you can't do that on your own, but you can do it when you get a little bigger. That we see is, you posted on this, I think just within the last week, 70% of physicians these days are now employed, whereas only 30% are private practice. So these 70%, I don't see them banding together because I'm hopeless, I'm helpless. Like, I'm employed, I'm going to get paid. You know, I've got my salary, I've got my RVU numbers I'd have to hit. They're not looking at those contracts like the private practice physicians are, because that's our lifeblood. Right. They feel a bit insulated. So one of the main initiatives and one of my main goals, I think, during the back nine of my career is I want to help swing that pendulum back to at least a little bit more equitable position. It's not going to ever be like it was back in the golden days, you know, where 70-80% were private and the other 20-30 were employed. And quite frankly, I think that there's a level of physicians that probably need to be employed just because they're not interested either in the private practice model or the business, or maybe they're more interested in research and academic centers like that. But how do we swing that pendulum and get those guys and girls that are so damn frustrated and hating medicine right now to kind of take up the sword and the shield to start to band together? I mean, we started this a couple of weeks ago. There were six of us that we met down in
Penn State. I saw that on your post. It was great.
Yeah, so I mean, it's the small little things, and we've already got our second meeting set up. I'd love to have you join our group and help with, you know, some of these solutions ideas. But how do we start to swing that pendulum?
Look, number one, I think we got to go on offense. Like, you know, the nice thing about having a couple of exits is I could just travel around and ask a lot of questions and just be myself and say, like, hey, Dr. Molly, how's this working? How come there's so many problems? And then you'd be like, Dutch, I don't have time today. Can you come back tomorrow? And it was like, yeah, okay, I'll stay in a hotel. I'll be back tomorrow. Right? Like, can I ask you 20 more questions? I did that with over 100 practices. And I just found the same thing, right? Margin compression, can't attract docs. You know, they'd rather go out of school. They'd rather go be employed because they think their first 2 years of a contract is just so amazing. And I'm like, yeah, wait till year three or four when you get smoked. And then, like, we have payer problems, right? We can't retire. I mean, one of the posts I did about retirement.
I know that one you were talking about.
I had more messages about that. Guys telling me that, Oh my God, how did you? That's not moral. Like, you can't take, you can't get money when you retire. That's crazy. You earn a salary while you're running a practice. And I was like, okay, you dopes. Like, this is why that you can't get anybody to come work at your practice, because you don't.
What was that number, Dutch? Was it like 15 million when you,
at the end of your career? No, it was low. It was five.
Okay. That is low.
I'm like, look, your house in any major city is a million. So I'm like, look, it's four more million. I mean, like, and yeah. Anyways, so I guess the point is, you know, what I want to see is docs go on offense, and I want to figure out, can probably in the early 2000s, I saw a trend where business people and docs, private practice docs, of course, work together. And then somewhere around 2007, 2008, I was in New York City and I saw the pendulum swing, right? And there was like a breakup or something. I don't know. I watched doctors go from like, hey, I trust business people and I have friend, like, you know, I have a CEO run our ambulatory surgery center, our practice, to like, I hate everybody that wears a suit, right? That's where we got suits, not scrubs, right? Or scrubs, not suits. And so I'm like, yeah, okay, that's cool. Except you see patients all day long. So how do we form this kind of relationship where, you know, like, you can look at my background from the last 25 years and you're like, well, kind of Dutch has been saying the same thing, doing the same thing. Like, okay, I believe him, you know? And so like, where do we get that? Cause we need this kind of partnership between the two. We need insurance guys. We need business people and we need docs. Now, of course, I'm going to say something controversial, which is, I think docs ought to lead the show, right? Because it's kind of your show to lead.
But how's that controversial?
Yeah, because a lot of people don't like it. They think docs are bad for business and docs are bad business people, and then I have to smack them upside the head and go like, okay, sure, yeah, tell me more BS.
Yeah, well, when they go to, you know, whether it's undergrad, medical school, residency, fellowship, and completed 28th grade, they can start talking to me and I'll start listening to them. But until then, and until they're in the trenches, you know, taking care of these patients and the global periods after surgery and dealing with all of their issues and potential complications and potential litigation, like, I don't have the oxygen to even consider those conversations. I was hospital employed for 2 years. It was absolutely freaking miserable. I hated it. And I think when you mentioned the suits and the scrubs thing, that's where I think a lot of physicians get the bad taste in their mouth, because they equate suits to hospital administrators and healthcare insurance company. Like,
those guys don't even have good suits. They have bad suits. I don't even like suits.
Horrible suits.
Right? Like, this is a nice one, but the ones they wear, I'm like, dude, it's like four sizes too big. You got to fix the shoulders or something. I don't know what you're doing.
It's a transparency thing though, isn't it? It's like, that's why those guys get, I mean, honestly, I mean, from all the conversations I've had, just, that's why I get pissed off. It's like, wait, why am I continuing to come back to negotiate these RVUs and my bonus? And I'm seeing 75 patients a day. And it's like, oh no, you know, we're
I don't know why we don't, you're Travis, you're right, man.
We're losing money on your service line. It's like, really? Like, how are we losing?
In our practice, the docs, really, some of the docs fought it, but I made transparency mandatory. I put my salary up top with my bonus, and I made everybody else do it. Fantastic. You know, because somebody's always like, that guy's not doing the work, right? Like, they won't say it out loud, but somebody's always thinking that. I'm like, hey, just put up the case volume. How much money did you put in the partnership? Like, where's your jack, right? Or did you take all the distributions and put it in your pocket to go on vacation, right? Or buy your new 10th new car? Like, just do it all. Like, just be transparent about it. I don't know why that's so hard. Hospitals have a hard time with that.
Well, that's...
I think they're...
Yeah, it's because the man behind the curtain is... he's the one getting all the...
Taking the private jet.
Yeah.
And sitting in the boardroom on the 87th floor and, you know, making decisions that... And his end-of-year bonuses that pale all of the rest of our actual hard-earned dollars that we've... that they continue to reduce, right? I mean, there's just so much bitterness. I can speak from the physician side of things. And I mean, we know the burnout rate's at an all-time high. We know that physicians are leaving medicine at an alarming rate. And again, I've mentioned this every single episode, is the suicide rate is through the roof right now with physicians. So like, that bubble is about to burst if it hasn't already. So
You guys are almost as bad as veterans.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
I got a bunch of Marine buddies. I was in the Marine Corps from 96 to 2003, reserves. 1 year of active duty and then active duty later. But, like, that's how it was, man. You got a bunch of guys coming home, not good.
Yeah.
You know, and only docs are the same. And I'm like, holy crap, the two professions I care about both have a hard time. It's a travesty. I don't know when we're going to address it. I did want to mention, you mentioned something about the young guys and how do we get them right to 70-30. It's interesting. I was in Lincoln, Nebraska a couple of weeks ago, and they had the inverse where 70% of the proxies are private and 30% are health systems. I don't know how long that's going to sustain itself, right? Because they're like, they could tell. The health systems were like walking around. There was an Optum guy there when we were there. And a couple of the docs were like, hey, get out. Like literally, like, don't come back. Get out of my office. You're Optum. Like, we don't like you. But, you know, the sharks are circling. But I think you're right about the pendulum swinging. I feel more positive in the last 6 months about that pendulum swinging than I have in any time since probably 2005.
Wow. That's a bold statement.
The next 10 years, we're going to take this crap back. There's so many ways. There's so many solutions to put us together without, you know, without losing our independence. Like, no one can tell you what to do. You can just practice medicine, but we can make everything more affordable. Travis mentioned earlier, how do you get a better deal on employee benefits? How do you get a better deal on malpractice? How do you get a better deal on a bunch of the expenses that plague private practices? That's like, well, like, let's just figure it out. You know what I mean? Let's have 3 meetings and let's get 20 docs in the room. Let's sort it out. Because everybody knows. Everybody knows what the problems are. And so I think once we begin to do that, like, we're gonna take a real jump. In Phoenix and in Tucson, the docs have grown tired of the two big not-for-profits, both in Tucson and Phoenix. And they've just banded together, right? Now, I came up with the ideas, and I showed them how to do the solutions and help some of the managers kind of figure out the paperwork and such. But I'm like, yeah, kick their butt. Like, take all their patients, like, be your own network, be your own insurance advisory service, right? Build your own full stack benefits plan. It's not hard. And like, get all, like, when I look at you, Doc, I think, let's say you go and have a beer or something with a really good friend of yours that owns a business. And you're like, hey, I take care of a bunch of your employees. We have a benefits plan. Like, can your HR guy get together with my guy? And can they have a conversation about how this works? Because right now the insurance company is taking $200 or $300 a year, you know, per employee per month from you. And like, I think we can make a better deal. Like, how hard is that? I think physicians have all the trust in the world, especially private practice guys, in every single community in the country. Like, this isn't limited in scale, right? Every single community in the country, you have the trust of the employers. If somebody says to me, hey, do you want to trust the insurance guy down the street from BCBS? Or do you want to do business with the largest ortho practice in town? And by the way, they put together their own network, so they now have everybody. Who do you want to do business with? I think the employers are going to go with the docs, and why not? Like, everything, like, nothing else has worked.
Let's go with that example for a little bit. So say I go to one of the larger employers in Erie, Pennsylvania, right? For a small private business. Is it going to get complicated because my practice offers just orthopedics and these, we don't have spine. We don't have this. We do total joints. We do shoulder replacements and rotator cuffs. And this is what we do. We should be your provider for that. But are they going to then say, well, we need somebody for our cardiovascular care. We need somebody for this. We need somebody for that. You're offering just such a small window of healthcare opportunities for us. Like, how do we, combat that?
So they're not going to know what to do. You have to have somebody on your team that, like, kind of like a guy like me or somebody that works for me that knows how to sell that. And I don't mean sell in a bad way, but like, in other words, like, show the employer how to do that. It's been very successful for us. So whether it's a small practice or, let's say, in Erie, you know everybody, and you guys get together on three subsequent Saturdays for 2 hours and you go, hey, there's 300 of us. We're all in different specialties. Some of us overlap, but that's okay because it doesn't mess with us geographically. Do you guys, you want to do this together? Voila, you have a network. Like everybody agrees, right? Like a percentage of Medicare, it's not hard. You just figure out what you want, right? Come up with a number. Don't make it too difficult. And now you have a network. And network agreements are not hard to build. That's like the easiest part. So now you go back to the employer and you go, hey, we're going to do your benefits for you, right? And obviously you partner with a broker. We can help with that. But nonetheless, that's the idea, right? So we've done this in four states and it's like working. And people are like, well, I didn't think it would work. And I'm like, we haven't changed anything. We haven't, like, it's just instead of the insurance broker pitching this to the employer, it's the doc and their own insurance broker pitching it to the employer. And voila, we've just taken over the benefits. And instead of the insurance broker getting all the money, they're going 50-50 with the docs. So now the docs are earning a portion of that commission, right? Rightfully so, they're rendering the care. And this just makes it easier. So I think we're going to see, now I know it sounds like nuance, but I think we're going to see more nuanced solutions where groups of private practices can take advantage of this. You know, the amazing thing is we have all the data for the employers. Like, so that employer you went to in Erie, I know you made it up, but let's just say it, right? We can ask them for their data and then we can download it. We can go, hey, you did 19 total joints last year. And then here's how much money you spent on all these other specialties and subspecialties. Like, we know exactly to the dollar what you spent. By the way, we've got you with our physician only network. We've got you covered 80%. And we have our own facilities. So we're going to show you how much money you can save. Now, this is all technology. Now we've built all these platforms. This doesn't take 20 minutes. So now the conversation you're having with the doc is, with the employer is, hey, you got 150 employees. You spent $2.5 million. Guess what? We think we can reduce it by $750,000.
Yeah. That's a no-brainer right there. As a disclaimer, this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professional from any such conditions.